This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. A year into the pandemic that feels far more than just a year to so many of us, how do we stay resilient and renew ourselves? Here in Chattanooga, Dr. Mukta Panda has a few thoughts on that. She is Assistant Dean for Well-Being and Medical Student Education at the University of Tennessee College of Medicine. Dr. Panda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray, for having me. It's a pleasure.
I wanted to start by talking about a post that you recently wrote called Cardinal Kindness.
So much has happened as we journeyed through 2020 and welcomed 2021. For me personally, and from what I'm hearing from my colleagues, is we've gone through these stages of grief. We went from anger and frustration and fear for simple things like our basic needs, whether that was physical safety or psychological safety, the uncertainties. And we are at this process, the journey of now processing our experiences. I want to think about it as really we've been going through this post-traumatic stress disorder, where we really need to look and pivot ourselves to really thinking about post-traumatic growth. And as I am sort of thinking about it personally and in community, whether I'm working with patients or students or my friends or colleagues, what is it that we can do to make meaning out of all of this and find some sort of connection to the purpose that we had and live in and welcome this new normal? And I've realized that as we have navigated all of this, one thing that has really hit home is the transformation that occurs when we pivot to caring for ourselves. Whatever vocation or profession we are in, not necessarily just in healthcare, we come with it with a purpose, with a passion, but with a commitment. And that commitment, if we really think about it, is in ways to serve. And oftentimes we are so committed to that service, whether that's professionally or even personally in our roles as parents, as siblings, as children, as colleagues, as friends, we give, 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 and giving to ourselves becomes less of a priority. When we don't do that, we are exhausted. We are exhausted mentally, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and then we get into this negative spiral. We start doubting ourselves. We don't feel efficient. We feel like we are not of value. We feel like imposters. And it sort of becomes this vicious cycle. So as I've started thinking about that, I really started thinking about what is so important is to give to ourselves as we give to others. And something that sounds like a cliche, you know, you hear about put on your own oxygen mask and put on your seatbelt before you do that for the children. But I think that simple thing is lost. So I've really focused a lot on how do we care for ourselves as we care for others.
Because you need to do both. If you don't take care of yourself, you are in no position to take care of somebody else.
Absolutely. And I have really started talking about to myself and others that self-care is not selfish. Self-care needs to be done selflessly. And the way I look at it, it is I and we, not I in spite of we. It's self and others, not self without others.
Or the selfish formulation of that would be I and me.
Exactly. So first myth I want to dispel is self-care is not selfish. We cannot give to others what we don't have with ourselves. And then if you really want to think about it even more philosophically, is who is the self? What is the self? If the self is an instrument to serve a purpose, is something part of a bigger powers, or some people even name it the divine, how much more important it is to take care of that self. The second myth I want to dispel is self-care is not counterproductive. I think we live in a system where our value is busyness. And we've sort of continued to augment that for ourselves. In fact, when you are taking time to be selfish with your own self-care, you become more productive. You do better. You're more efficient. And the last myth I want to dispel is that self-care is not expensive. And I think sometimes we have this vision, maybe fueled by the media, that you have to go away, take time off from what you're doing, spend a lot of money at an expensive resort or a spa to re-energize and rejuvenate yourself. So what I'm talking about is really pivoting and finding those moments to give self-care as you are doing whatever you are doing. That is what is going to build our resilience and help us recover to that return to meaning, return to purpose. And so I actually call it my sort of 9 ways of doing it for myself that I remind myself. The first one is replenish myself. I'm the worst at getting hangry. I need to know, I need my buttons when I'm hungry and eat. And then the second thing is when I feel frustrated or upset or angry or defensive at something, how can I immediately before reacting, reframe my thoughts and think about it in a different way and turn to maybe wonder and curiosity and sort of think about why am I feeling like that? Or why did they say this? What would be something behind this? The other thing is when I'm too lonely, and I've sort of realized this more in this pandemic era when we don't have that physical connection, the social connection, and really realizing that we have to be creative and find that connection and communication to have that social community around us. And then when I'm too tired, when I've not had a restorative sleep, or when it's so busy that I feel more robotic in what I'm doing and how do I take a break? I call it my acronym of HALT. Remember to not get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired and halt myself. The second thing is I've started keeping a self-care calendar, making it a ritual. We have so many rituals in life. It's part of what we do, brushing our teeth, eating, or having a professional calendar of meetings and stuff. Where is self-care in that calendar? Where have I penciled in mukta time? In fact, for my work, it's called strategic planning. And that's really the time when I'm too creative. It may be just 15 or 20 minutes where I'll take a break, go for a walk, and, you know, make sure it's blocked in my calendar so nobody else can do that. The other ritual for me is gratitude, being intentionally thinking of 3 good things that happened at the end of the day or 3 good things as I wake up in the morning. The other thing for me for self-care is, which I'm working on, this one is not easy, and that is regulate my expectations and learn to say no. I'm very good at regulating expectations from others, but I try to remind myself that none of us are perfect. I'm not perfect, and I'm a lifelong learner. And I love that quote by Theodore Roosevelt, comparison is the thief of joy. So, you know, I am me, like you said, I am me, and I need to take care of me, and that's enough. And that then allows me to respect myself and actually laugh at myself. And that humor has really helped also. The other 2 things for me that are really important, and I've seen that in a lot of my colleagues, and I hear this from my friends also, is that before I became this, and that's usually a role, a doctor or this and the other, I used to paint or I used to sing or I used to play the violin. How could we go back to that and become resourceful with our creativity? And how can we find a way to do it in community? That has become really a lot of fun when we've started finding ways to do something creative. And I know in one of our programs, they decorated Christmas cookies and gave them away at the children's hospital. Or you run a 5K race together, or you have a reflective writing class with the students that we do, as we shared at our last art museum. And that takes me to the last thing, and that is reflection and connection. Taking that time at the end of the day to really think about it, why am I doing what I'm doing and why is self-care so important? So I think where it comes back to that kindness, which you mentioned, the cardinal kindness, was a way of self-care for me. The last few weeks have been really busy in many ways. I feel sort of a little overwhelmed, and I realized I had to take care of myself, and gratitude, as I mentioned, was one of the things. And part of my gratitude is creating this happy thoughts bank in my brain. And there was this picture of simple kindness. This was from the birds. I love watching birds. And there was a little baby pigeon who apparently, I think, was very lonely, couldn't see the parents around, and was perched on a ledge near the bird feeder. And there was a cardinal taking care and feeding the baby pigeon a bird seed at a time. And to me, that was a simple act of kindness. And it was an invitation for all of us to try to just be kind to somebody else without any judgment.
What have you been hearing from your colleagues in medicine? They have to have been dealing with some of the very same things you've been talking about here. And some of them, I would imagine, have been having some of the very same aha thoughts that you have expressed here.
You're absolutely right, Ray. I think what we are hearing is a lot of exhaustion. I'm tired. We've been really gracious among ourselves as team members to recognize that and make sure everybody gets a break. You know, you covered, like I was able to take 2.5 weeks off during December while somebody else was covering for me. So, you know, just that spaciousness that we are gifting ourselves of time. The other thing is feeling a lot of sense of isolation. And that is because of a lack of connection with family and friends and travel. So I think there is a little bit also of a feeling of exhaustion of not being able to do that. And I share a little bit of fear on my part is that I'm hoping that complacency doesn't set in with a lot of pseudo reassurance early than later with the vaccine. I think we will still have to practice physical distancing and wearing masks for a little while. So I think while there is this tension of how long will this last and should there be some pseudo comfort. The other thing that I'm hearing a lot is insecurity financially. I think we've all been impacted by that in ways that the repercussions are on what can be offered. But I think what I've also seen is the generosity that has come with that, at least in my community. So I think it's important for me to really lift up how well the community, from my vantage point, has come together to help during this time, either with physical needs or with work-related needs, and be there for each other. And the last thing that I'm hearing is still a little bit of uncomfortable conversations around the issues that still exist around unjust and fair culture. And I think that is something that is going to be an ongoing discussion. And I think one thing we have to be grateful for, that there is awareness and there's conversation and dialogue around it.
And that brings us to the month ahead in March and a virtual retreat, which you are hosting, Reframing Resilience, Renewing Leadership. You are hosting this retreat as we approach 1 year for the pandemic in this area, in Chattanooga and beyond. Why is reframing important? Why is renewing important?
As I shared earlier, that as we invite 2021 in a year later, it's very important for us to really be mindful and intentional of what this new normal is going to be. And that's where the renew comes. Renew happens once we look at what was, understand and unpack it authentically, both what was wonderful and what could be better, and use it for our learnings as we move forward. That is the growth that I'm talking about. And reframing is, it's going to take a mindset. It's going to take a mindset of our positive psychological change. I'm hopeful, and I really am so convinced that we have that resilience in us, that we will get to a better and higher level of humanity as a whole, as a human kindness, a human existence and human functioning. We are intentional about using the word leadership with a small L, because we're all leaders. We are leaders of ourselves as we take care of ourselves, and we are leaders of our community. The purpose of doing this retreat with a dear friend of mine, Shelley, who also helped publish my book, which is happens to be the anniversary of the book too, and her book's third anniversary and mine first anniversary, we come to it with the understanding that we are learning also as we are going, and learning in community that is safe, in a community that is intentional about understanding and unpacking what this post-traumatic growth is going to look like, would be meaningful. I'll share a very brief story with you. I had the opportunity in 2010 to be in the presence of the Dalai Lama, His Holiness, at the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds in Madison, Wisconsin. And it was part of my facilitator work. We were about five of us that had been invited. And then this was a session where he was there with Richie Davidson, Arianna Huffington, and a couple of other celebrities like that. And he was sitting in the center, and there were about 1,000 people in the auditorium. this was open to the public, and he had the University of Madison ball cap on. He had been gifted that, you know, with his orange garb. I mean, just such a common sort of humble person. And as questions were coming, there was somebody sitting in the front seats who, the question was, what is your secret to world peace? Literally, I'm going to imitate what he did. So he had this ball cap on and he looks down and looks down and he looks at the interpreter that he has as though asking, did I hear the question right? They talk in their language. And then he bursts out into this big guffaw of laughter. And then he looks down again. He looks up laughing and he says, I don't have the secret to world peace. And he points right back at the person who asked him the question and says, you have it. And he looks at him and he says, you take care of him. He takes care of her. She takes care. And he says, there is world peace. I have never forgotten that. And I get goosebumps thinking about that.
And where can people go online for more information?
www.muktapandamd.com. And we're really excited.
All right. Dr. Panda, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray.
Long before the pandemic, many people 60 and older struggled with loneliness. Lockdowns, limits on visitations, and social distancing only deepened that struggle. The Tennessee Hope Line is a toll-free number staffed by trained volunteers who offer encouragement and hope for lonely older adults. The number is 844-600-8262. That's 844-600-8262. And it's open Mondays through Fridays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern. Bevel Puffer handles special projects for the Tennessee Governor's Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives.
Bevel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell us more about the Hope Line.
We heard about a group in North Carolina that was doing something similar to this, and we reached out to them and decided this was something that we could pretty easily get behind and get started for the state of Tennessee.
And so how does it work?
It is a toll-free line. The number is 844-600-8262. And it is staffed by volunteers who have been recruited by the Tennessee Baptist Mission Board. They are vetted and background checked. They go through a pretty extensive process, and then they're trained as well. Many of them are already licensed counselors, but it operates from 9 to 3 Central, 10 to 4 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Anyone can call. It's completely toll-free. It's just a line to offer hope, encouragement. But as well, the mission board, because the Baptist Church is so connected throughout the entire state and rural and city, they can connect them to resources wherever they are. And they're also able to refer them to the helplines through the state and get state support as well if they need something like that. Something specific, food or supplies or medical services or whatever.
The volunteers have the information to refer these callers to others if they are in need of some form of help beyond calling up a volunteer.
That's right. Yes, they've got a whole list of resources in front of them. They can refer them, or they can take that referral and give it to somebody else so that the caller doesn't have to be responsible for following up, because sometimes they're just not going to do that. And it's nice, particularly by providing them with a local connection, because we are taking calls from Chattanooga, Knoxville, and all out in Lake County, you know, all across the state. So they can refer them to people in their community. And the goal, of course, would be to give them a long-term connection that will be valuable forever for them.
What, if anything, can you tell us about the problem that this is trying to help in the Chattanooga area, in Southeast Tennessee, in Tennessee as a whole?
I was really fortunate because I am in Chattanooga, and I quickly became connected with an older adult community work group that kind of started up as COVID began. And this is a group of people from across many sectors of faith and human and social services, and really headed up by someone at UTC. that group came together and they were begging for something like this. They had already seen a need. And then as their services were curtailed, they saw that need had only increased. It was a great local connection for our office to be able to rely on their knowledge as a springboard to help get something like this off the ground.
What response have you gotten so far?
They're getting calls with great regularity now. And mostly it is just people who just want to talk. They are just lonely. They want to share their trials and they want to share their joys. And a lot of people are grieving at this time too. So to have somebody who can offer just encouraging words, who will just listen without judgment, but with hope and support to offer, has just been a great service to the lonely people. The Tennessee Hope Line is 844-600-8262.
Bevel, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Archway Kids is a nonprofit in East Chattanooga that educates children to become entrepreneurs to empower their own lives. Carlos Hampton is interim executive director of Archway Kids.
Carlos, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about Archway Kids.
Archway is a brainchild of myself and a lady named Michelle Peterson to show kids entrepreneurship and to introduce them to soft skills that they may not have.
How do you help them?
We hold sessions where we show them things like niche marketing, product placement, how when they're watching movies or music videos, how the Coke can is always placed where you can see it and the reasons why. It's to also help the kids be more important or figure out that they're more important than the brands that they hold so dear. The Gucci's, the Louis Vuitton's, the Polo's, and all those other name brands that kids kind of idolize. We try to focus them to be more taken by themselves rather than the brands that they will spend the last dime on.
How many kids are you helping? Where are these kids? How are you helping them during this pandemic?
We started out in East Chattanooga, 2523 Glass Street, which is the Archway building. With the pandemic and everything that's happened, we've gone virtual and actually partnered with Boys Prep and working with some boys over there, actually creating a Tide Now as a project to give to the ninth grade classes they graduate this year. We started out with like 15 kids when we were meeting in person at Glass Street. But now we have a few kids over at Boys Prep that we meet with virtually every Wednesday from 1 to 2 o'clock.
What response are you getting from the kids that you are helping?
It's a positive response. Myself, growing up, I was always told to do something with my life, but never really what to do. And even in growing up, I was raised to be the employee over being the employer. The response in teaching these kids that they can be bosses is like seeing that light come on and that new discovery or whatever. It's like having a laptop for 9 or 10 years and then finally realizing that it has Bluetooth capabilities. We're showing these kids parts of themselves that they didn't even know, and how to tap into that so that they can be future entrepreneurs and leaders in this community.
And what are some of the next steps for those kids you are helping?
Some of the next steps for the kids, hopefully, is to get them to come back into the program and become instructors. We realize that as we get older, there are some language and even some other barriers between ourselves and some of the kids. And with those kids being closer in age to the up-and-coming kids, they'll be able to give this information over a lot easier than, say, I would be able to. As far as the program itself, we hopefully create some synergy with some of the other organizations in the city to kind of spread out and not only help kids in the inner city communities, but start a link for the whole city and cast a larger net.
And how does a program like this help an area of the city such as East Chattanooga?
As someone that was raised in that area, I was raised to go to work, never really realizing that I could be an entrepreneur until I owned two of my own businesses. And that feeling of satisfaction when you've created something and you can see the turnaround and the profit that it makes, that's rewarding. And so why shouldn't everyone at least know that that's an option in life and that they don't have to just get up and go to work? They can create their own.
What are some of the ideas that you have been hearing so far from some of these kids who are in the program?
The latest kid actually wanted to do a tracking device. And this was to keep people from losing their laptops, their book bags, and so on and so forth. And we got off into what's called private labeling, to where him being 13 years old, he probably couldn't create this device. But we showed him where he could partner with someone that's already created the device and put his name on it, like Yeti cups or the Arctic Trail cups that are the exact same product. It's just different name brands.
And if people want more information, where can they go online? Where can they call?
They can call me at 423-902-7200. or go to our website, archwaykids.com. And then we even have a social media page on Facebook.
All right, Carlos, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. This afternoon, I am delighted to tell you we have the first in a new series of streamed performances from Barking Legs Theatre on Dodds Avenue. The Wednesday evening jazz sessions have been a mainstay at Barking Legs for more than 5 years. They and we hope in-person performances will resume sometime later this year. In the meantime, they are streaming the shows on their Facebook page. For the inaugural performance of 2021, this is guitarist Sean Perkinson and bassist John Steele. Thank you.
To be here with Sean Perkinson, my old friend, and we have known each other for about 30 years. We met at the University of Tennessee, but we played other things. We worked in a band around here maybe 25 years ago, and here we are. We're still playing some jazz. The first song we played, Freight Train, Tommy Flanagan, great piano player, wrote that song. Just finished Armando's Rumba, one of a few tributes to the great Chick Corea, who we will miss dearly. We'll continue now with a Thelonious Monk song. This is called Panonica.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sean Perkinson and John Steele from a performance in Barking Legs that was streamed on the Barking Legs Facebook page. Barking Legs plans to continue virtual Wednesday evening jazz sessions every week, starting at 7 on their Facebook page, and we'll be sharing them with you every Tuesday afternoon here on Scenic Roots on listener-supported public radio. Next Tuesday, we will have the second half of this show, guitarist Sean Perkinson and bassist John Steele.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.